affiliate in e-commerce, right?
Okay.
Traditionally, like the last, so the first season we did like commercial content, but from a creative perspective. Like I interviewed the creative directors from T Brand Studio, that type of idea. So more in that branded content world. And then last season we focused on, again, branded content studios, and the more the business side of it, like how are these big studios running? And then this season, because there's this merger kind of happening in this commercial content where like affiliate and e-commerce and sponsored, like it's just one big thing. But there's like these nuances within it. Like there's, and we'll talk about it on the episode, but you know, there's like Gannett's Reviewed, Wirecutter, there's CNN Underscored. Meredith has a big operation there. Dot Dash has a big operation. So it's really like, I'm really intrigued by it. I think people are starting to hear about it more, even though it's been around for a while. And so that's the idea. The idea this season is just like talking to the people that have been in this for a little while. And I do it chronologically. So the thing that people are most interested in is like you and your backstory. So colorful as you want to be with your backstory. I mean, you've got a pretty, and I'm going to lead you with a couple of questions on it anyway.
Yeah.
And then we move over to CNN Underscored. We talk about that. If there's ever a question I ask, I mean, this isn't like gotcha journalism here, right? This is going to be a fun, like casual podcast. If I ask you a question, you don't feel like you can answer directly. You can just say like, hey, I don't think I can answer this, but here's, you know, that type of thing. And then we'll talk about the future. Dodging
them even when that happens. I mean, the only stuff just up front is like when it comes down to numbers, and I mean, and you know that's the only thing. Anything else, I'm pretty good at deflecting them. So we should be good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is there anything before we get started? Do you have any questions or anything?
No, man, this is super fun. I was in between gigs for a while and I did like 5 episodes of my own podcast, and then I got hired at CNN and they said, you got to stop it. So I haven't done one of these in a while, but it was fun to get out the old audio interface and the mics and stuff and get back in there. Now I'm on the other end of it. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that's great. All right. So I'll set up a little intro separately from this. So I'm just going to bring you right in. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. I know that you used to have your own podcast and you were the host of it. So now you're on the other side. You get to be the guest.
I'm on the other side. Now I know what it feels like to have the bright hot spotlight in your face. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Thanks again for having me. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're the editorial director at CNN Underscored. And I'd love for you to unpack what CNN Underscored is. This, people know CNN. Right? Anderson Cooper. But this is a different part of CNN. So I'd love to just hear what CNN Underscored is and what you do there.
Yeah, sure. It is part of and yet sort of kind of an ancillary piece of CNN. You're right. At the heart of it, CNN Underscored is CNN's product reviews and recommendations section site. We do product reviews. We do, we curate internet sales. We find the best sales going on the internet. But kind of the bread and butter is that product review piece. You know, just to be, for the sake of clarity, that the comparison is we're CNN's version of kind of a Wirecutter, Consumer Reports. That's what we do kind of at our bread and butter, but we do have some differentiating things that we think, will help us kind of appeal to the CNN audience in ways that maybe some of those other players who have been around longer and certainly are bigger than us, that they're not quite doing. That's sort of the white space we're moving into. But yeah, that's what we do. And, you know, at the heart of it from a business angle, you know, CNN is a smart, you know, company, and they're figuring out how to provide alternative sources of revenue into CNN that aren't just advertising based. We are not advertising based. We are affiliate link based. That's how we monetize the content we do.
Yeah. So was, you know, 5 or 6-year-old Mike Bruno sitting around going, I think I want to be the editorial head of a affiliate based business model with CNN. I'm sure that was it, right?
Yeah. Well, almost every word in that sentence is something that no one knew existed when I was 5 or 6. So, .com, internet, affiliate, the rest of it. But, my story is kind of, I was in, I started out in newspapers way back when I'm from Chicago. So I started out in newspapers, was an English major, ended up going to journalism school, came out of that, was writing for the internet, had a few experiences writing about things for the internet, and instantly, you know, getting response, mostly negative, but it was very thrilling. Immediately knew I wanted to go into digital, moved to New York. I spent most of my career, which is about 20 years now, I moved to New York 21 years ago, in magazines, mostly entertainment journalism. I was at Entertainment Weekly for many years on the digital side, worked with a lot of great people, cut my teeth at Time Inc., a great place to learn how to do stuff. Time Inc. is now two iterations past what Time Inc. being Time Inc. And then went over to Billboard. I was actually the editor of Billboard, the print and the digital. I was the editor of Billboard for about 3.5 years. And I just kind of got to that place where it was sort of a combination. I mean, on one side, it was kind of the fact of like doing all this, and another Grammys came up, and I was just like, it's another Grammys. And I just realized, oof, I'm burnt. There was definitely that, but it was also, you know, in media, I'd seen in magazines and newspapers and other things too, but like I said, on Magazine World, people that just worked as hard as they ever did, were as talented as they ever did. Heck, they worked harder than they did maybe even back in the heyday, just as good as they ever were. And they're just, the market was just dried up. And it was just, I remember sitting around with my analytics guy at Billboard and trying to figure out how we can make a revenue positive model for, you know, programmatic ad supported content. And it was like, yikes, I'm not sure there is a model for it. So the idea of finding kind of a new thing, again, some of it was just like kind of this again. And some of it was like, is there a way for me to kind of use what I know, use what made me successful this far, but to be able to move over to another source of revenue? I looked a little bit at some of the branded content stuff. I didn't find that was as much for me. But then I had a quick stint. I went over, worked for Red Ventures for a little minute, for a brand called The Points Guy, who does a lot of credit cards. I cut my teeth a little bit on it there. And the next stop was CNN, which was perfect because it's like now I get to do that, right? That affiliate thing, that providing another source of revenue for a news organization, for an organization that my whole life I've thought is fighting the good fight. Even if I don't always agree with everything they do, CNN's fighting the good fight. I'm not going to go on the front lines. I'm not Clarissa Ward. I'm not that person. I probably never was. I'm certainly not now. But I could certainly help make sure that that person has a salary and that we can pay for the plane ride to get her out there. And, you know, I once said, you know, I thought about the New York Times, and I thought that the New York Times sends someone up to Albany to cover Congress every day, right? Every day someone's up there covering Congress. That reporter, he or she in a year likely never produces content that's going to cover their salary. But we sure as heck need that person up there. How's that going to work, right? So this is that kind of thing. And that's sort of what keeps me going. That and the novelty of it. It is new and it is an exciting, wonderful space. But it's also kind of fighting that good fight and you know, helping out the industry I've been in for a long time that kind of needed some folks to figure out how to help it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? This isn't uncommon that one part of a media company's business is paying for a part of the business that doesn't make mathematical sense on just a business side. Like, I mean, you go back to just print newspapers and it wasn't the articles themselves. It was the advertising that paid for it. I mean, subscriptions were great, but a lot of that money came in through these big full page ads that cost, you know, $100,000 or more to get in for one day. And now I think and I think what's happened now is just this idea that, that banner ads don't work to pay for all of this high quality journalism. Like the math, I remember this. I worked on before I started Pressboard, I worked for a media company and we had all these digital sites. And I looked at programmatic probably the same way you did at Billboard, did the math. It didn't take long. It took like a couple hours of doing the math to say, oh, this doesn't work. Like this will never be profitable on programmatic, especially because I probably the same time as you, programmatic, the CPM was going down. So it was like, okay, it doesn't make sense today. 2 years from now, it's even worse. So like, how long do you fund that idea? And I think that's when people started moving over to this branded content affiliate. It was just like, hey, listen, if we're gonna be pumping out content, some of it is going to need to be profitable and some of it doesn't need to be profitable. And we'll attract people with the unprofitable stuff possibly and then monetize this other side. Where I'm really curious is how close, so you've got branded content, which is an advertiser comes to you, and that lives in a different department of CNN, but in general, branded content, advertiser Chase Bank comes to you and says, or comes to a publisher, and they just say, hey, can you write up an article about this topic? We're going to talk about, like, you know, finances during COVID or something like that. And they own that piece, and it's created, you know, with their direction, collaboratively, and then it's published. What I find really interesting around this affiliate world is that there isn't, like, Chase isn't coming to you and saying, write this up about me, I will pay you, and I want you to write it in this fashion. In a way, it's, I guess, this service journalism side where it's a bit more, it's much closer to editorial and serving the reader. The business model is just different than editorial content. Like, how would you explain the way that CNN Underscored acts when it comes to creating content?
Well, you actually did a great job of it right there, Jared. You're absolutely right. I mean, and sometimes it's an internal explanation too, right? I mean, I was able to come into CNN after some of the heaviest lifting came. They had already kind of launched it as a bit of an experiment. I was the first real editorial leader they had come in to kind of blow it out. But it remains to this day a little bit even of internal edification. I mean, I describe it all the time as service journalism. It is what we do. I have some folks that are on the business side and the business development team that, like, work with the brands and make sure that they're in the affiliate networks and whatnot. But that would be the same as a sales team talking to advertisers. Like, what we do, we never talk to the brands other than maybe to say, can you send us a few blenders that we'll then send back to you when we're done reviewing them? That's all we do. Yeah. And often we don't even do that. We just buy them and return them because, I don't know, maybe they give me the, like, super powered blender or something, you know,
yeah,
because they know that I'm reviewing it. So I, even sometimes we don't do that. We're totally editorially independent, completely editorially independent. I did a presentation internally recently, and one of the things I said was, you know, we're not reviewing these products, pardon me, to get people to, we're not reviewing these products to get people to click the affiliate links any more than a news article is reporting the news to get people to look at the adjacent ads. I mean, right. That's the method of monetization, but the ethos, the process, the independence, the integrity of the content and that relationship to the audience, that's an important one, is exactly the same. If people think that if people think that we write, you know, this is the best blender or the best mobile phone because we make the most money, or that has anything to do with it, then our content is worthless. I mean, so it's not even just like that contract that, hey, we're CNN. CNN wouldn't do that. I mean, that is true. CNN wouldn't do that. And as part of CNN, we have extraordinarily high standards. But it's good business anyway. Like, even if I was an independent doing this, I would do it the same way, because how are you going to have a business otherwise? So it is quite different. It's one of the reasons I got into this as opposed to the branded stuff, which is, I mean, there's certainly integrity and creativity. I mean, those guys are amazing that do that. I at Billboard, we had very robust business creating huge experiential and all sorts of different elements that come into branded content campaigns. There's the website, but then there's like an event, and there's this, and there's interactive. It's really cool, but it's quite different. I mean, you're sitting there literally in the room with the brand talking about what you're going to do, what you're not going to do. At Billboard, it would be like what artists are going to be involved that fit their brand. Like, it's quite a different thing. Here, we're just doing their work that basically magazines and newspapers and other entities have done all along. It's just, it used to be you'd see like a gift guide in a magazine, then you'd have to like write it down or tear the page out. In later days, you would go over to a separate window into Google. We remove the friction. I mean, it's actually more service to the reader. You just click that link and you go right there. I mean, if you want it, there it is. So, and we just get paid in a different way, which then makes us independent of sales and makes us not vulnerable to Facebook and Google and the folks that are sucking up all that ad revenue. So, I mean, it really is the same ethos. It's just a different method of monetization. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you live right on the line, I would say, right? Because, so I'm curious, I imagine people want to put you into a box, right? Even personally. So are you a journalist? Are you a business guy, right? And I think your career, you skipped one specific place that I just have to ask you about. Soap Opera Digest was one of your first jobs, right? So you got to tell me how you end up, you're either like deeply into soap operas and you're like, I need to write about this for the world, Or you're just out of school and you're like, I need a job. Tell me how that comes about.
Well, shouts to Stephanie Sloan and Mara Levinsky over at Soap Opera Ditis, who, as far as I know, are still holding it down over there. They're amazing. I mean, it was kind of a combination. I had gotten out of, I came here. I worked for, here being New York, I came to New York, worked for a startup, did a bunch of really cool music stuff. Some of the best writing I ever did was there. And then this was like 2000, 2001. And that was the first of maybe two or three internet bubbles that burst. All of a sudden we were out of jobs and there was no business plan for this thing I was working for. And I didn't know what a business plan was. So I never thought to ask about one when I was working there. I was out. I did a lot of freelancing, a lot of great writing, New York Post and some other places, some dance magazines. I was into electronic music a lot. And it was also just kind of a thing you could kind of get into. But yeah, I ended up taking a job doing some kind of corporate communications work. It was a shop that did, they were kind of outsourced for like our clients were like Pfizer and Accenture and corporate things. And I did that for a while. It was interesting and I learned a lot, but I kind of was still freelancing on the side. I wanted to get back into entertainment. And to your question, you know, I'm going to out myself. Yeah, I was a Days of Our Lives fan. Growing up, my sister watched it a lot. I watched it. I'd get to the gym and I'd ride the treadmill and catch like 30 minutes of it about twice a week back in those corporate communications days, which is all you needed to like keep up with it was to watch it like a little here and there. And it was kind of a lark. It was like, oh, that'd be fun. Let me apply to that. And I'll be damned, they hired me. I mean, I think it was partly like, you know, it was mostly women, not all women. It was mostly women. And they hired a man to kind of do some of this work. And I started a column called, it was called You've Got Mail, spelled M-A-L-E. And they just let me be the dude having like kind of very sort of, you know, cisgender, heterosexual male type takes on soap operas. But it was really fun. It was really different and it resonated and it was super fun. But after a couple of years, EW came and it just seemed like there was a little more growth potential. So I ended up kind of moving on. But yeah, I was both a fan and kind of like, how do I get back in? I learned a lot there. I mean, you go to a place like Soap Opera Ditis. I mean, all the soaps are gone now, except for like two or three, amazingly, like since I was there. But, you know, you really get access to people. You learn kind of in this sort of microcosm, the way it's going to work when you get out. So I actually learned a ton. I learned about like television production and things like that. So it was kind of it was a really good learning experience and set me up for what followed. Yeah.
I just love this like line of topics that you've covered, right? Like you're into electronic dance music, Days of Our Lives, Chicago boy, probably into some sports, right? Good sports town.
Yeah,
good sports town. And then into entertainment and music. Seems like there's a good path there. And then you come into the points guy, which I think is like credit card and travel and rewards That's related. Right. And then into CNN, which is known as a news company. How do you think, or why do you think someone like CNN or the New York Times, why do these review and recommendation sites, why do they work under this masthead versus being completely independent? Like, what is the reason to have this as a part of the CNN brand?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an interesting question. If you look at the landscape, I mean, you know, Consumer Reports has kind of been around for a long time as an independent. I think of them a little bit differently. They're subscription-based. I still think of them a little bit more. I'm sure someone over there would kick me for saying this. I think of them a little more analog and print still, even though they do have digital, obviously. I mean, it's a wonderful digital product, but it's a little different. It's not quite as like up to the minute. It's a little more digital presentation of print. But Wirecutter was also independent for many years. Yeah. And, you know, New York Times pulled them in. I think CNN, and this is, you know, I think CNN had been thinking about this for a long time and just it was the best path was to build it, right? I mean, New York Times went out and did the buy and CNN opted to do the build. You know, in terms of kind of how that works, you know, there's a couple things I think that make a lot of sense. I mean, one is definitely there's just kind of a natural brand authority that comes along with like, ooh, if I'm going to take advice from you on buying a $700 widget, you know, washing machine, phone, whatever, like New York Times, CNN, like that has some heft to it, right? I mean, even like USA Today probably has a little bit of that. I think you look at some of the other players in the space, like, you know, Vox Media, New York Magazine has The Strategist, which is a wonderful product. It's a little different though. It's a little more New York and Brooklyn and cool and subjective. I envy so many things they do. I mean, all props to them. It's great business. It's not the same one we're doing. We're doing a little bit more. We're trying to be a little more heft to it and a little bit more, I guess I'm going to say objective. And I don't mean that the non-objectivity they're doing pejoratively. I just think that they're a little more like fashion and trend and stuff. And frankly, it's stuff that we're moving into as well. We are doing some of that. But anyway, I'm digressing a bit. But yeah, I do think that that authority is there. But then I think the other thing there is, it's kind of part and parcel to it. I came in and I believed that Underscored was kind of benefiting from that authority. And the idea was like, well, we need to really make sure we live up to it. And I think that's the other thing is it keeps you honest and it keeps you, you have that brand authority immediately there. Like you see it in your Google search or you see it wherever and you see CNN reviewing this, that's good. But being part of CNN, like I said earlier, like it's good business. I wouldn't do it any other way, but there's no way I could, even if I leave and someone else comes in that has a different design of what this could be. Of let's take the money. We could bend a few rules here and there. CNN's never going to do that. They never would. Neither will the New York Times. So it also keeps it honest. And that's kind of that virtuous cycle of good brand recognition, authority, and ensuring that it always lives up to that. And I think that's part of why those kinds of brands can really benefit from that brand and going into this type of business.
Yeah. It's this double-edged sword. The reason that people trust these reviews is because it's CNN, right? It comes with that expectation of like rigor and, you know, editorial distance from whatever it is, the subject that's being covered. And the same time is like, you screw that up. If you lose that, the whole business model is gone, right? Because that's the whole idea behind it. And I'm wondering how, because I've got, same as you probably, you've got a bunch of friends that are not in media and advertising. Right. And so trying to explain it to them, hey, we're writing this great piece on the best blenders. We've been testing them like crazy. And they're like, oh, okay, well, how do you make money off of that? You're like, oh, the blender companies, you know, cut us back a commission. And right away their mind goes, oh, okay, so you're recommending the one that you get the best commission, because they think like, why would you not do that? There is a little bit of common sense to it. And it does make practical sense to say, hey, why don't we direct? We have the intent of the user. They're looking for a new blender. They trust us. We could just push them to the blender that's giving us a 30% commission instead of the one that's getting us a 5%. Is the only thing keeping that from happening just the integrity of the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, and definitely people have that thought right away. And you know, the cynical folks out there will say that there's no way that isn't happening. But the integrity of the organization is certainly what's out there. And again, the fact that I don't think I would have much of a business if I did that. I think people, the public is very savvy and would sniff that out, and suddenly I would just be, you know, I would be no better than Taboola ads. And maybe that is a good business and you could run that stuff at the bottom of pages and it would be fine, but it wouldn't be the business we're doing. We're not just out making money. We actually have a consumer facing brand now, and we're going to work very hard on making that. But what I will say is, in order to kind of demonstrate, right, for people that that isn't what we do, we show all of our work, and that's the real thing we do. Like, because we're not doing that, and because we want, I think most people don't look at it, but it's always there. Like if you look at our articles, if you look at our, I keep saying blenders, if you look at my, our blender review, I mean, at the top, we say what we recommend. We have a very pithy little short TLDR. Then we have a longer one on each blender, but then we get into what we did, how we tested them, how we did this. We talk about all the other ones we tested that we didn't recommend. It's all there. So we always show our work. And again, I'm trying to make the articles very easy to navigate so that it's there if you want it, but it doesn't disrupt you, because I know I have some disciples now, thank goodness, that they're like, yo, I trust you already. Tell me, I know you've done the work.
Yeah.
But it's always there on every article to keep it going. So it is the integrity that keeps it there. I think without the integrity, again, you wouldn't have a good business. But you know, it's not just like, hey, trust us, we have integrity. I'm showing the work. It's as close to objective as you can get reviewing products. It's almost mathematical. I mean, we have scorecards. We have, you know, we do, I have people that have been at at the Hearst product, I brought in a gentleman who was one of the OGs over at Wirecutter. People that know this stuff have come over, helped me build what you know I'm trying to build here using what they learned. We show all our work. So it is about the integrity, but we're not asking you just to trust us. We show you what we've done. So it's pretty clear on every single article.
Yeah, I like that. And I see this as the separation that's happening. Affiliate has been around since I got into marketing. But for a long time, it was like this hidden little thing in the back, right? It was people trying to buy keywords on Google ahead of the actual company just to get that last click, right? Yeah. And that was the game for a long time. And I think that's why affiliate as a word started to get, you know, a bit of a bad name. And then people started calling it's a bit like in branded content, people stopped using advertorial because advertorial had this like association with a different time. And so now people will say e-commerce instead of affiliate quite often because it's just a, you know, it's a modernized version of this. But I like that you're referring back to Consumer Reports because I remember Consumer Reports as a kid. And that was the one you just trusted them because they weren't the car company. Right? They weren't the vacuum company. They made their money because people trusted them and would get the magazine or whatever. And if they lost that trust, you knew that their whole business was at risk. So there is this like capitalist need to keep it, the editorial integrity, because as soon as you lose that, your business goes away, which is like a bad thing for a capitalist entity. With the model and the business of it, like talk to me about the growth of this, you know, since you've been there. I think you went from, what was it, a couple people when you started, and now what is it up to in a couple years?
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple people on the business side, and the gentleman who hired me, Bryce Weidlitz, who was there for many years, and it was his brainchild, and he launched it. You know, and he had a couple of journalists, hardworking young writers, but they were kind of spinning up content. You know, they were creating relationships, spinning up content, experimenting at the very bottom of the page. What can we do? I mean, it was always on the level. I mean, they were never doing anything shady. I don't mean to imply that, but it just was kind of experimental. I came in, I had like three people on my team, and one of them, Jake Kroll, my tech editor, is the one person on the team who's been there longer than me. He's still there. He's still the tech editor over there. And now we're up to, you know, on the purely on the content creation, so social, edit, video, photo, we're up over 20, and we're definitely growing yet again this year. We're doing quite well and growing very quickly, and there's a lot of support at the highest levels at CNN for what we're doing. You know, and I'm not going to say that the business piece of that doesn't come up. It does. We talk about the business. It's good business. Look at the business they're doing. But just as often, or sometimes more, depending on the circles, they talk about how great the content is. It's good content. I mean, like the higher ups at our company are among the people that are like getting our emails and love it and buying stuff. And that's really what you know, especially the mode I'm in now. You know, I'm used to kind of pivoting or growing brands, and that's been a lot of my career. And I'm certainly a business-minded guy too. I mean, I've always been realistic about that. I think most journalists, especially digital ones in this day and age, even junior ones coming out of college, have that sensibility. I had to kind of grow into it. When I came up, it was very church and state. And you still have church and state, but you're able to kind of like see both sides of it. Back then, you didn't even look over the other side of the wall. You know, now at least you see both sides, even if you know where you're at. But it's really about the content. I mean, it's about the growing this brand and making sure that there's more people on it every day and that we help more people all the time. I mean, that's what gets me going, is that there's just more and more people that are like, wow, that CNN helped me find a great, you know, sale, or helped me find a great washing machine. At the end of the day, that the business will follow. And that sounds corny, but it really is true. I mean, especially we're still young. We're still the up and comers. We're still the also rans. I say that like, you know, that's fine. We're coming for everyone, but we're still very humble about it.
Yeah. And what phase is this at? Does this business model work right now and it just needs to be scaled even further? Or are we still at the, let's invest in this idea, it's early, let's keep testing, and we'll get to a profitable business that can scale? Like, what stage are we at right now in this world?
No, it's definitely a profitable business. I mean, it's definitely also, it's not reached its peak. I mean, there's clearly low-hanging fruit. There's clearly, I could throw a bunch of cliches at you. There's clearly things still falling through the cracks. You know, there's a lot of optimizations. We're running real fast and growing real quick and, like, you know, collecting all these. I was just talking with someone earlier today about all the different distribution channels we now have, which is wonderful. And, like, we need to, like, actually optimize that. We probably need someone to, like, help us. You know, we're still running very fast and going and doing things in real time. So there's optimizations to come. But no, this is a very profitable business, and it's something that there's a lot of, you know, my partners on the business side are very bullish and say that, you know, it's something that brands and retailers and everyone is still very, it hasn't capped, it hasn't peaked. It's going to be around, I think, for quite a long time. I mean, similar to the way that brands started to say, like, you know, banner ads, they didn't work for publishers, but they didn't work for anyone, right? They're disruptive. People don't like them. The brands knew everyone was ignoring them, or worse, they were annoying people. So that's why they tried to have this more, you know, the smarter way that suited the user, maybe even added value to the user that then enabled them to achieve their goal. Similar over here, you know, how do they market? Well, they could run ads and do all sorts of commercials, but they've all taken a piece of their budget to say, like, there's these sites out there like CNN doing great journalism around our products. And if someone buys through that because they happen to journalistically come to the pick, that's been happening forever. But if someone actually clicks it off there, they'll pay out on that rather than, like, buying ads. I mean, it's I think it's going to be around for quite some time. Yeah.
And what do you think the biggest struggle is it from a business model? Like, CNN has this big brand authority. The domain authority around CNN is huge. You have existing audiences that you may be able to leverage through email and through Facebook pages, et cetera. Is this still a business model that requires owned assets, meaning owned audiences? Or can you spin up? Do you think someone can spin up a site, buy a bunch of ads on Facebook, drive traffic to it, and make enough commission on the back end? So I guess my question is, do you have to have an owned audience already to be able to make this a business? Or can you go out and buy an audience and convert it?
You know, that's a good question. And I think about that sometimes myself, even just thinking about, you know, new areas we're going to go into. And quite frankly, also thinking about how underscored, and this isn't exactly what you're talking about, because you're talking about something that comes out of nowhere and spins up. But even as underscored part of CNN, I think about how I can maybe take pieces of this business and spin off and be sort of independent, which would free us up. And so we're playing with a lot of that, which, again, I'm not saying it's the same, because, like, we had some pretty tall shoulders to stand on even to get to a place where if I spun off a section that was sort of independent from CNN at some point as, like, its own self-contained brand, sort of the reverse wire cutter, if you will, right? Like, if I was going to do that, again, I stood on some pretty tall shoulders to get there. So not exactly the same, but I do think about it. And I actually think you probably could do that. I mean, I think to some extent, influencers, well, they call them creators now, right? Social media creators are doing that all the time. Now, I don't know if, like, a CNN, if you could just kind of come out and do eyeliner, mobile phones,
right,
blenders, and all different stuff. I think that is probably the thing that maybe you benefit a little bit more from being a CNN or something. But certainly you could pick your spot, and the overhead's a lot less if you're one person, right? You could probably pick your spot, start doing it. I mean, there's nothing saying you couldn't have a consortium of creators come together eventually and build that out. I mean, I think there's some business models there that we've yet to really see. I mean, social commerce, like them actually doing commerce, not just, like, taking, hey, hashtag sponsored, taking a dollar, but actually the platforms themselves coming in and saying, hey, like, let's enable you to actually do commerce on these. That's very new and just kind of starting, right? I mean, it's certainly not even close to where it's going to be in, like, 2 years. And as that picks up, I think we'll see things like that a little bit more. So, from that perspective, I feel like it actually is kind of happening at a low level, and I think we'll see it more. But the way we do it a little bit more broadly, maybe a little more robust on, like I said, the, like, kind of objective subjectivity, as opposed to it just being like, hey, I trust this person because I love her and she's beautiful and I want hair like her. How do you do it? That kind of thing. You know, that guy's got sharp clothes. Where does he get them? Those kinds of things, I think, is probably a different model. But the same idea of being able to make a business out of this independently. Yeah, I think it's possible from that kind of different angle you could do it.
Yeah. And something happened in 2020 with Amazon, and I'm curious how like something, so what, just for anyone that doesn't know, I think it was 2020, like right around like pandemic hits, which like throws everyone's business all over the place. Everyone doesn't know what's going to happen. And then in April of 2020, Amazon cuts their commissions that they give for their affiliates for the almost in half across the board. Like I think electronics went from 6% to 3%. And I know that's just they like public kind of deals and you can do, there can be deals that can be done directly. But how does that moment in time affect the, because you're at CNN underscored at that time. Like what happens in that month when that news gets dropped?
Well, you know, I don't work a ton with the commission side of it. That's the business piece. And we're certainly aware of, I, you know, as the editorial director, I definitely am aware of how we're tracking on revenue each month and each quarter and each year. I mean, that's a big part of what I keep an eye on. But, you know, to be honest with you, we totally came into our own in like April, May of 2020. Mm. And we're not the only ones. I mean, I think e-commerce in general, everyone from the publishers like CNN underscored and Wirecutter to Amazon itself, they all saw like, oh, no one's going outside. People are buying, you know, mail order stuff. Yeah. Instacart went nuts. I mean, I got a little secret for you. Like I started doing Instacart and like I still do it now because I'm like, why wasn't I doing this all along?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people were doing that kind of stuff and we came into our own by pivoting very heavily. We were kind of doing our thing. We just started testing products properly at that time. I was there a little bit less than a year when it hit. And we were kind of doing our rote thing. We had our plan, but all of a sudden it was like, okay, hold up. We need to pivot. We could help people. I saw all the other stuff on the CNN homepage that we're adjacent to. How do we start talking about the things that people need now? Right. You know, we would borrow reporting a little bit here and there from the people, the great journalists that do really in-depth health reporting. We are able to leverage some of that. And then when they talk about a certain kind of face mask, we could go out and find them and find them at good prices. We were doing reviews of all mail order from coffee to meals to all different kinds of things. And, you know, hand sanitizer's out of stock. How do I find it? We found some here. Tweet that out. Like helping people. We came into our own. The audience exploded. And overall, I mean, what I can say is overall, we did just fine through that period, despite what, you know, probably some of that stuff happened. I mean, even to this day, the supply chain's still all screwed up and getting things to people on time. And, you know, we provide service, giving people strategies how to get through that. That's probably not great for us. There's probably definitely some people that see something that I'm not going to buy that. That's too long. I'm just going to run over to Target, you know, like where maybe they do have one. That probably happens. That hits us still. But overall, the more opportunities we have to help people and to serve them, and there was no greater time to help people and serve them acquiring necessities, right? Buying things over the internet than that. So overall, we came into our own during that period and it was a horrible time, but we were able to do really good service and help people through a horrible time, which ended up kind of defining who we are, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting because e-commerce explodes. Basically, right? And so, yeah, this one supplier, which is a big one, Amazon's not a small player in this, may cut commissions, but overall, just everything is going up and to the right, I imagine. So is there a point that you see, and maybe this is happening right now, but one thing that Amazon has done that's pretty public is, hey, a lot of stuff is selling to customers in this category. Why don't we create our own product in this category? Is there a time where you think CNN underscored picks a product like a phone charger and, you know, builds one themselves that they test and beat these and then becomes a seller of product as well as a reviewer of product?
Well, are you asking seller or maybe you're asking both, or are you asking like actual sort of product manufacturer, like branded products that we create?
I would say brand, like I don't see CNN opening up a factory and like putting together molds and stuff like that, but possibly identifying a product that has a big need, identifying the best one in its category, and then branding it or otherwise, but essentially like a CNN underscored product that is being sold directly to customers where you are both the merchant and the reviewer. And I'm curious if that's been discussed, if you see that on the horizon and what that might look like.
Well, it's certainly something we've thought about in great detail. It's not, there's no current plan to do that per se. We just have other lower hanging fruit. But yeah, it's 100% something we talk about. I look often to I'm huge admirers of Food 52. Yeah. You know, and they came up and they a lot of the community management they did, a lot of the fostering of that community, and they put in a lot of time really working with them to make sure that like we're talking to you, we know you, we know what you want, you really doing that. And we're amping that up on our side too. We really want there to be that relationship. But after they did that, they were able to kind of come up with their own products. And I look at that as a really good model for something that someone in our space could potentially do. Now there's some potential conflicts. You know, if I have a phone charger and I say it's the best, you know, well, that's, you know, all of a sudden now everything's upside down. Everything I said about, you know, we're gonna say what's objectively the best. I no matter what I show you, there's no way you're ever going to buy that mine is better than everyone. I'm inherently conflicted when I'm doing that. So we do have to work out some of the details. The way I think of it, kind of just generally speaking, is for someone in our place could do it, is to kind of look at the market and say, well, what's the niche? Nothing is there. Like there's no phone charger that does blank.
Mm.
Get a partner that would come in and do it. You know, we would say, this is the best overall phone charger. This is the best cheap one. And then we might say, and now we have one here that's the best one for use case blank. There just isn't anyone else doing that. Right. I think that's the kind of way we could get in there, talking to people, say like, no one quite has this one. I think that could be a way. And again, I'm speaking in very kind of broad terms, but yeah, we definitely talk about that. I mean, and as we talk to our audience more, learn more, get more and more expertise on different fields and what people want, I think we might have an opportunity maybe one day to step in and fill niches that people say, yeah, I wish there was one that did this. Well, you know, maybe we find a partner, we go out and the CNN underscore charger that, you know, I don't know, folds up and fits in your wallet. You know,
yeah. Something like unique, right? Like you're probably not going to go out and, you know, build a TV, right? And manufacture a TV, but it's possible there could be some of these like edge products, you know, that come out that you could just be like, hey, this makes sense. I think our audience would be into it, and then release that. I just think it's an interesting space because essentially you're recommending products. The business model is that those products are going to give you a share of that revenue, no matter how it's separated. That's the business model behind it. And then eventually it's like, hey, we know enough about this product. We've tested enough about this product. Maybe you don't become manufacturers, but you could become like, you know, a distributor of types. And I'm curious to see if that's where this model, not even just CNN underscored, but we did see BuzzFeed with Tasty start having like Tasty products going into Walmart. It feels like there's this spectrum, really interesting spectrum in affiliate from what you guys are doing, which is let's do good editorial work, good service journalism, and people will buy those products and there's a business model there. Then you have ones that are producing essentially branded content, which is the merchant is paying the editorial property to create it. And it's very intentional, usually disclosed, hopefully, that was the involvement with it. And then you get into like, hey, we're going to build our own products and we're going to sell those products. And what they all connect to is this idea of having some authority and credibility with the audience. And I think that's something that I've seen the big media properties navigate really well. And I think it's because institutionally, you have this like, huge editorial mission that you're connected to no matter what your business unit looks like within there. I'm curious to hear what you think the next like 3 or 4 years looks like for you and CNN underscored.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different ways it can go. I think in broadest strokes, you know, kind of to continue a little bit the thread we were just talking about, for instance, our audience is very, and not just ours as underscored, though certainly underscored, but CNN in general, we have a very, people that are eco-friendly, people that are very much concerned with the environment and, you know, the climate crisis that we report about, quote unquote, in CNN quite frequently. You know, and we're definitely pushing into that area, and that could be an area that opens up, sure, not just like becoming a go-to place for finding and vetting some of the products and educating people on, well, what do you look for and what's really eco-friendly and isn't. And we've started that and we'd like to commit to that a little bit more. We think that's both helpful and good business. that could also be a product thing too, right? Like imagine you could have almost any product and what, like, where are they not doing eco-friendly products? We get a good partner. That, so that could be the sky's the limit on that. We could do really big on that. But the other things we're thinking about a lot is a lot of the same stuff that, that other folks are thinking about. I mean, we're big on, you know, it's going to sound corny in 2020, almost two to say, but you know, mobile's big. And, you know, one thing I know generally about this space and, you know, it's just, I've seen it elsewhere is, folks still like to buy stuff on desktop. It's definitely very strong. People buy on mobile. I mean, our mobile audience is huge. I'm not saying we don't, but to make the mobile experience for purchasing products maybe a little bit better is something I'm very much focused on. I want people watch. I'll say that again. I'm very interested in having people become more comfortable with that and having that phone in your pocket all the time be a tool. And customization is big too. As CNN, we're very big and we do everything very one size fits all. And that's just not the best way to do any of this. I'm very interested in leveraging the fact that as CNN, and this is even compared to some of our closest competitors, we're very strong across the entire country, not just on the coast. We're a global company. We're very strong globally. So there's other kinds of things. I don't necessarily think the stuff that I'm putting for people that live mostly in LA and New York is going to be the same for someone in Dallas and Santa Fe or Mexico City or Dublin. But I do think that we have the ability to kind of tap some of the things that we have, some of the existing audiences, some of the infrastructure and staffing and, you know, general CNN brand to be able to do some of those things. So that's also big. And customization is big and fun. You know, I think like it's still very flat. I think it's still, and not just us. I mean, look around. And I said earlier, like no knock on Consumer Reports. They are the best at this. I mean, they have this awesome, you know, they have a test track and they do stuff that we can only dream of doing. And we hope to get to do one day, but it's very flat. It's very much like, here's some information. Here's the products. We stack them, you know? Yeah. You could click a button to like have an accordion pop out and see more, but I think that there's wonderful opportunity to have more tools to find things, to say, what do you want specifically? We have a whole vertical on money. We do a lot with credit cards and travel. I think that that's a wonderful thing. It's not a one size fits all answer. And to be able to say, you know, where do you want to go on vacation? Where do you spend your money usually? And what's your budget? And be able to spit out, you should get this credit card. You should join this program. And in 6 months, you could take the family to Aruba. That's not that far off. We just need some of those tools to do. So I think some customization and interactivity are big too. And then video is the final one that I see it being more and more. We're a video company. We currently have a segment on New Day. It's our morning show once a week. I'm actually doing it currently. I'm going to get other people involved where we talk about that. But video on site too, like not just YouTube. We're about to launch on YouTube probably within the next couple of weeks. But also when you go to a Blender review, there should be video there, just like Amazon does it, right? You could look at it, you could see it in action. You know, you can go in a store and you could pick up that picture and you could get a sense of how heavy that Blender picture. I'm really extending the Blender example here. You could pick up that picture and feel how heavy it is, and that's nice. When you're buying it digitally, you miss that. But I do think video, while it doesn't completely fill the delta, drop some frozen blueberries into that picture and get a good sound of what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You filled that delta a little bit. I want to have that on every single thing we do, and it's in your pocket, mobile. Those are the kinds of things that we're looking to do as we go forward.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy the change in purchase behavior. For example, like you can buy a Tesla on your phone in like 10 minutes. If you would go back even 4 years ago and say, yeah, people are going to buy a car with their phone, you'd say that's insane. Like you got to test drive it. You have to work with a car dealer. You got to finance it. And now you can buy it in 15 minutes and it'll get delivered to your door. Like that's it. I don't know what else is left if you can buy a vehicle from your phone. The only next thing is you buying your house without looking at it, which I live in Vancouver, Canada. Buying houses sight unseen is like common because there's a list of people waiting. So I guess that could just happen through an app as well. But I can see this move.
Jared, we bought a little vacation place in New Hampshire. We had to buy it sight unseen too because the market's so damn hot. So even that's kind of happening. I mean, we used the phone a little bit. It wasn't purely with my, we used the telephone, the voice aspect of the phone. So it wasn't purely digital phone experience. But I mean, honestly, there's not much left. You're right.
Right. And I think people have found different ways to be able to validate those purchases. So a Tesla is pretty easy because, I mean, they're commonplace. You probably know someone with one. They've been in the news all the time. Their cars are almost exactly the same as each other, right? So so I think that that makes sense for that purchase. But people are starting to decide. I like using, I always use shoe examples. You always use Blender examples. I think like I've never even sold a shoe before, but for some reason, I always go back to a shoe example. People need to find out how they're going to purchase this thing without ever lifting it up, without ever trying it, without ever stepping in a store. And I can't imagine a way to do that without it just coming from someone else that has tried it. Like, this is just word of mouth at scale. And my word of mouth is coming from CNN underscored because, hey, you tried four blenders. And the one that gets like frozen blueberries crushed the fastest into a smoothie is this one. I have one last question for you, which is, what is the favorite product that you guys have ever reviewed other than blenders? I'm not going to let you say blenders because we've talked enough about blenders. And what is it about that review that you really loved?
I'm going to go with, there's a lot of candidates. I'm going to go with the Swedish dish towel. Those little reusable dish towels. We kind of jumped on that as it was starting to take off. I think it was a bit of a TikTok thing. I believe if my social media editor was here, she could validate. We just crossed 100,000 followers on TikTok too. We're killing it on TikTok, which is wonderful. It's great to get our content out on that channel. It's great to take the content in. And I think that's one of the ways this was, is we saw it come in and we're like, well, we should talk about these. They're eco-friendly. So it ticks that box again for us, right? Mm-hmm. They're reusable. They're really inexpensive. It's like, you know, under $20 for a huge pack of them. And people just went nuts. And internally, I had my boss was like, oh my God, the Swedish dish towels. And everyone was talking about it. They're called Swedish dish towels, which is just kind of, I don't know, interesting and quirky in a way. Yeah. Right? Like, I guess they're Swedish, but Swedish meatballs, Swedish dish towels, you know, it's just kind of a cute name for them. And that's definitely my favorite. It blew up for us and kind of ticked a lot of those boxes. And it's cheap, right? It's kind of like in your life. It's good for the world and the environment. And, you know, what's $20, you know? So that's probably my favorite.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's been awesome having you on the show. Everyone should check out CNN underscored. Definitely check it out for blenders by the sounds of it, but headphones and like basically credit cards. It seems like you guys cover almost all of the products. It's cool to learn about how this like service journalism can have a business model around it. I think what's been the hardest for media companies over the last 10 to 20 years is like finding the business model that lives in digital. There was a really nice business model that lived when it was just TV ads and newspaper ads, and that lasted for like 50 years. But this transition has been challenging for a lot of media companies, and it's cool to find these little pockets where there's like a nice, profitable, scalable business. So loved having you on the show.
Yeah, and you could use what made you great as a journalistic entity to find a new revenue source. And that's what's been great watching my part in CNN underscored, but watching the others do it as well has been terrific. So yeah, and thanks for having me, Jared. It was really great. I really enjoyed the conversation. It was terrific.
Yeah, we're clear.
Cool.
That's awesome. That's perfect. That was great.
Awesome, man. That was really fun. Thanks. Yeah, anytime, man. Let me know. And definitely hit me when it's up. I definitely want to share it with everyone. Let folks know.
Yeah, I'm going to break this. So this is the first time that I've done the video part of it. The reason I might not even, we might not even post the videos because it is a podcast. So that's going to be an audio part. Yep. The reason that we're doing the video is because I find it easier to talk to someone.
Yeah, because totally. Like, no, it's true.
You can read the person's body language and let's see if they want to say something or if they're really, whereas like when I was doing the last season, so I did the first season in person in New York, all of them in a little room. I did most of the second season, then the pandemic hit, and then we started doing them remotely. And it was really hard to do just an audio only because sometimes there would just be this little gap and I'm like, oh no, did I lose them completely? Like it's their mic not working anymore. And then we would both come in at the same time again, right?
Yeah.
So this
I would find it was funny. I would find sometimes I'd be on there. And, you know, look, this is a level of just professionalism you'd expect, but like sometimes I'd be talking to someone and it's like, what are they doing the dishes for Christ's sake or something in the background? It's like kind of noisy. I'm like, Jesus, what are you doing, man? So like, I hear you. It's like the more we can bridge the gap. I mean, I like to do them. I was actually, I, you know, pack it in my backpack, literally drive to their house and do it. Like, if you can, if you're in Vancouver, we couldn't do that. And this is a nice tool I wish I knew about, where you could get a high fidelity mic recording. But I mean, yeah, I would go sit across the table from them, because to your point, it's like, you're just going to have a better conversation. So I hear you. This is the closest thing to get that. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Cool.
Yeah. If you ever do your podcast again, I recommend Zencast. I know we had a little bit of trouble getting on it, but what happens is it records locally the video and the audio on both sides. Yeah. So even though we're kind of like buffering when we're looking at each other, I'm going to get your video back and it's going to be perfect, right? Christine. And then it puts them together. So, and it does this little quick, you'll appreciate this because I have an editor. But most of this is like me and you do this. I take a look at it. I tell the editor to make some changes. But Zencaster has this post-production button. You hit post-production and it does like all the sound leveling and like all that stuff. It does a really good job.
Does it like take out noises and things too? Like a clunk? Will it like edit? Yeah.
Not great. It doesn't do that great. Yeah. Like, so if you get like this knocking sound, but even editors have trouble getting that background noise out, I find, or like sound engineers.
It's kind of hard,
But this has made a lot easier.
I think we were pretty good here. Hopefully, I went in my basement to do it. I have a drum set behind here that there's a little resonance, but I don't think you're getting that on the mic. So hopefully you didn't hear that. There was one ding at the end here, but other than that, we should be pretty clean. So
I think
should
be clean.
All right, man.
And then I'm going to do a party for everyone that's on. Like, you're in New York, so I'm coming to New York. It's like, it's going to be a bunch of people that you know. Like Jackie Goldstein and like Emily from Forbes. Like, I feel like you people all know each other so well.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wouldn't it be fun to just like have a party at the end of this?
So fun, dude. I am in.
Cool. Well, it's great chatting with you.